called Better Decisions and Fewer Regrets. Better Decisions, Fewer Regrets. And so in preparation for the series, I began to think about some of the decisions that I've made in my life that didn't really turn out all that well. So my friend Jeff, two of my stories today involved my friend, my best friend Jeff, when I was growing up. So we're about the same age, and we would have been like nine years old, maybe. Old enough to get in trouble, not older. The brain had not developed enough to go, you know, this possibly may not be a great idea. So we grew up in a small town in northwestern Ontario called Ignace. And it would get cold in the winter. There's like, man, when he moved there, there was maybe 800 people in town as a kind of a mine, a couple of mines that opened up north. The town was starting to grow, but there was maybe 800 people there. And so, you know, no, a couple of grocery stores, a doctor, and that was about it. And so my friend gets this idea. His dad smoked, so he stole some of his dad's matches, not his cigarettes. His matches. And he goes, hey, we'll go somewhere. We'll light a fire. Because eight-year-old boys should always be left alone to light fires. And right? Absolutely. And so we go out and we decide we're not going to light a fire, but our hands are getting cold because, like true eight-year-old boys, we don't really think about dressing appropriately. But we had parkas on. I had a brand new winter parka that my parents had bought me, probably ordered from Sears or Army and Navy or something like that, because there was nowhere in town to buy one of those. And so Jeff says, hey, I've got an idea. We can light the matches and put them inside our pockets. Now you think about this, right? Really, really, nobody was thinking about pocket warmers in those days or foot warmers. We were way, way, way ahead of our time. We just had some gaps in the process. And so we light the matches, we put them in our pockets. And yeah, the pockets feel really, really warm. And then we're walking along and we smell this smoke. And it's like, what is that? That's a bad smell. What is that? Bad, bad smell. And he's like, it's coming from your jacket. And my jacket wasn't open flame. It was just all smoldering. And you know, probably by about the time we saw it, I had a hole about this big in my jacket. And so it was like, well, now I have to go home. Right, we, you know, pat the fire out and throw some snow on it, and then it's like, well, now I have to go home, and I can't even keep my hand in my pocket because I don't have a pocket anymore. And so I go home, and it's like, again, 8, 9-year-old boy, and I have this idea that if I hang it in the porch outside, no one's going to notice. My parents aren't going to notice that I've burned a hole in my brand new jacket. So I go in, have dinner, and, you know, one thing and another, and then my dad goes out to the porch for something, and he comes in carrying my jacket. And he said, what happened here? And so then I have to fess up that my best friend encouraged me to put matches, burning matches, in my pocket. Well, I can tell you that before that day ended, not only had my hands been warmed, but my backside had been warmed. And, you know, I don't know how long I would have had to wait for a new jacket because, again, like there was no place to buy one anywhere. But, you know, bad decision. And if I took time this morning, I could tell you a whole lot of stories about my friend Jeff and I and kind of some of the things that we got into. And if there was ever a bad decision, if I was ever in trouble, kind of if something crazy happened, he was in the mix. Like this one time, there's a creek that runs through our backyard. And there's a shack, an old shack on the other side of the creek. And we're throwing rocks at the shack. It's no harm, no foul. It's just an old abandoned shack. We're just throwing rocks at the farm at the shack. And Jeff says to me, hey, you should see my curveball because it's pretty good. So I'm standing beside him. I said, yeah, go ahead and throw it. I'll watch it. No, you should stand behind me so you can really see it move. That seems like a good idea, right? Because like I'm not standing in front of him. He's not throwing rocks at my head. We did that stuff other times, but with pellet guns. But so I'm standing behind him. He goes back to throw, and the rock flips out of his hand, hits me in the head, right here. and cuts me. So I go down, oh, is it your eye? No, it's not my eye. But like my hand is full of blood because it's a head wound. And so I'm bleeding all over the place. My mom drives a school bus. This is after school. My mom drives a school bus. She's not at home. I run to the house because what else am I going to do? I run to the house. There's blood everywhere. I go into the house. There's blood. Like I leave a trail of blood up the steps, through the kitchen, down the hall, into the bathroom. There's blood all over the sink. And we're trying to get it stopped up. My dad comes home and we get a cloth on it and some ice. And he's like, we got to take you to the doctor, get you stitched up. And so we go to the doctor and my mom comes home and the house looks like a murder scene, right? Better decisions. Fewer regrets. Now, I'd like to tell you that all of my kind of those kind of decisions, all of those kind of decisions are long in my past. But I had a problem we have a sewer pump at our house, a sewer grinder pump, and it wasn't working properly. And I'll tell you, like, if you don't know this yet, if you got a problem at your house, have Jordan on speed dial. Jordan, I got a little problem over here. Oh, yeah, Timber, no, come over. I'll take a look at it. So Jordan comes over, and we're looking at it, and he says, we kind of figure some things out, and really, we kind of had the problem solved, but we didn't know it. But we had to pump everything out because there was, like, ground-up raw sewage in the well, and it's all just a mess. But we're doing our thing, and it's all going really good. And Jordan says, it's not Jordan's fault, okay? It's not Jordan's fault. Okay, because I just watch whatever Jordan does. If I can't do it myself, don't know how to do it myself, I'll watch and I'll learn. And most times it works out pretty well, right? But there's a valve on this system. Jordan says, I'm going to open that valve and we're going to, because I think maybe there's a blockage in that line. We'll make sure there's not a blockage. And Jordan opens the well. We didn't, that valve, and we didn't know that the line was pressurized. So there, we're both in. He's in deeper than me, and I'm looking behind, right? And all of a sudden, whoosh, is a crappy shower. Okay, so it's bad, right? It's my eyes, it's in my nose, I think maybe it's in my mouth. And, you know, you're spitting everything else, right? Now, Jordan is a tradesman. He's a professional. So he handles it all very calmly. Right? He steps back, he grabs a rag, wipes himself down, gets the hose, rinses himself off, because Jordan's a professional. I, on the other hand, in moments like that, just become a lunatic. So I throw open the front door to the house, dripping sewage all through the living room, the kitchen, and into the bathroom. Clean myself up and feel like I showered three times to get the smell out of my hair, but I felt like I'd really, you know, I'm back. And by then Jordan was all cleaned up. He's rinsing off his tools and everything else. But then Barb is teaching and she knows nothing about what's going on. She comes out of the studio into the kitchen and goes, why does the house smell like sewage? Better decisions. I need to make better decisions. And you know, here's the thing is that, I mean, those are kind of funny stories to tell, but sometimes our lives, the outcome of the decisions that we make are not so funny. Sometimes the outcome of the decisions we make are very, very complicated. And so here's what I've learned. I've learned that good questions lead to better decisions. If I ask myself good questions, like, what's going to happen when I run into the house smelling like raw sewage? I told this story to our ministry director of operations, and I told her what I had done, and she said, if you were my husband, I would have killed you. I'm grateful that Barb is more gracious than Stacy, right? If you were my husband, I would have killed you. But good questions lead to better decisions. And so here's some foundations we're going to start with. This is a six-part series. Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to talk about decisions. And we're talking about decisions because we've got, as a congregation, a big one to make, hopefully in the next few months. We want to make good decisions. So here's some foundations to good decisions. Number one, ask good questions. Ask good questions. Number two, answer honestly. ask a good question, give yourself an honest answer, and then number three, act accordingly. And if you do that, kind of just at a very high level, as a general statement, ask yourself good questions, answer honestly, and act accordingly, you come out with better decisions. Now, here's the thing. Better decisions lead to better outcomes, which lead to better lives. Better decisions lead to better outcomes, which lead to better lives. Like, if we're honest about ourselves and our lives and our situation, it's never just one decision that we made. It's never just one thing that we did that set our life on a particular course. It's always a series of events. It's always a culmination of decisions. One of the important things that we need to remember is this, is that you're not the only person who's impacted by your decisions. Nor are you the only person who is impacted by your regrets. I mean, on the one hand, wouldn't it be wonderful if my decisions only affect me? It didn't affect Barb, didn't affect the kids, didn't affect anybody around me, just affected me. Like, well, then I could pretty much live how I wanted, right? And the regrets that I had for my decisions wouldn't just affect me, but or didn't affect anybody but me, but it's not the way it works. Here's the reality, is that our decisions leave our fingerprints, the fingerprints of our decisions remain on the lives of people all around us. The fingerprints of our decisions remain on the lives of the people all around us. Some of you I've shared this story with, but I want to share, tell you a story, just kind of from my personal life. This is my younger brother, my youngest brother. His name is James. He was born October 12, 1980. Isn't he just handsome? Doesn't he just look like me? So in the fall of 1980, in the spring of 19, he was born October 12, 1980. Spring of 1981, I'm finishing my first year of Bible college. And my parents come out. They couldn't be there for grad, but they came out. They came out about a week early. And I got to show my little brother off to all of the young ladies in the school. Gentlemen, have a baby. I mean, don't. It's not a great life plan. But Barb was still in junior high at that point. So, but I was showing her my brother off to any young lady who showed any interest in him, and had a couple of wonderful days in Saskatoon together. And then my mom and dad are heading back to Saskatchewan. And about 20 minutes on April 24th, 1981, about 20 minutes south of Saskatoon on the 16 highway, there is a little town called Clavette. And as they're driving past Clavette, a drunk driver flies off a grid road. My dad's a very good driver. And he saw him coming, just assumed he was going to stop. A guy flew off the road, T-boned my parents' car. My brother was killed instantly. That picture was taken 2 weeks before he died. So here's the thing. The guy who hits them gets out of the car, gets out of his vehicle, walks over, sticks his head, the window smashed over. Is everybody okay? Sees my brother and my mom in the back seat. It's like, oh no. And he runs away. The police find him 2 hours later. He blows 2 times the legal limit. 2 hours later. He had spent the night drinking, making his own decisions, drinking, till he was so drunk that it was time for him to go home, never thinking he was going to be involved in an accident, was going to take an innocent child's life, never thinking about any of that. But he left his fingerprints all over our family. Now, I'm not angry at him. This is a long, long time ago. There's lots of healing that's happened. But the decisions of someone we'd never met left their fingerprints all over our lives. On April 29th, 1910, take me to the next slide. This is a picture of Frank, Alberta. Anybody know where that is? Frank, Alberta's Crow's Nest Pass on the number three highway. This is Frank, Alberta. Taken pre-1903. So it was a little booming coal mining town, and people would come in from, you know, some people live there, about 600 people live there, but people would come in from all over, right? The prairies, and they'd work there in the winter in the coal mines making money. And but on April 29, a rock slide broke away, or a chunk of rock broke away from the mountain. Imagine this, it was 450 meters high. That's 100 meters taller than the Malahat. That's a big chunk of rock, and about 150 meters deep. So from the driveway to the corner, that big chunk of rock slid down the mountain, and in 90 seconds cost 90 people their lives. Just boom, and it's over. What's interesting for the purposes of this morning is that a guy named James Forge left on the train hours before, the passenger train, hours before that slide came down. He'd worked his last shift at the coal mine, got on the train, and returned home to his wife, family, missing the slide by hours. James Forge was Barb's great-grandpa. So on the one hand, right, you have a story of someone making irresponsible, terrible personal decisions that wreak havoc in someone else's life, not to mention his own. And the other one, you have just a family man who's going home to see his family and chooses to leave that day. I mean, if he decided he was going to work one more shift or work for one more week, Barb wouldn't be here today. Everything I know about Barb and her family, all of that would be gone. None of that would exist. But because he got on that train that night, the ripples of that decision go on for decades. And he left a spiritual legacy that lives on through his descendants. And he wasn't thinking about any of that the day he got on the train. He was just going home to see his wife, his kids, get back to farming. Here's the thing. Your choices, our choices shape the path and the quality of our lives. Every day we make choices that affect the path and the quality of our lives. We are, and nobody wants to hear this, but we need to hear this. We are who we are, and we are where we are as a direct result of the decisions we've made. Right? Ouch. That's on one hand, it's the truth, but it's kind of like a kick in the head at the same time. Right? We are where we are. We are who we are. We have the life that we have. We're in the situation that we are, all because of the decisions that we make. And see, this is an important kind of personal growth life lesson here, right? We can choose to live our lives as a victim. We can choose to let it be that, well, it was because of this happened, or because of that happened, or because that happened, that I am the way I am. And I'm not denying that bad things happen and they have a shape, they can shape the trajectory of our lives. But at the end of the day, we need to take responsibility for our lives. We need to take responsibility for our lives and acknowledge that the decisions we make shape who we become and where we wind up. Your life is a story. If you don't like your current story, or even the current chapter of your story, you can change it by making better choices. The great Canadian band Trooper had a line: if your world is all screwed up, rearrange it. And we rearrange it by making choices. So how do we write a better story? How do we write a better story for our lives? If you don't like the story that you're in, how do you write a better story? Well, here's five questions you can start with. Now, I would suggest to you, these are not the only questions, nor should they be the exact questions that you're asking yourself at this point in your life. Question number one, will I enjoy this? It's a good question to ask. Question number two, will this hurt me? Question number three, will this hurt someone else? Question number four, will anyone find out? Right? Question number five, I'm not saying they're great questions, I'm just saying they're a starting point, right? Question number five, what's my out if someone finds out? Now remember, I work with politicians. Some of them could ask these questions, right? Right? What's my out if someone finds out? A better question would be this: what's the wise thing to do? What's the wise thing to do? Now, I know this. If you take me just one more slide over, please, right? What's the wise thing to do? Well, I can tell you this, that the wise thing to do is probably the opposite of everything the previous questions were telling me I could do, right? What's the wise thing to do? When we're writing a better story, one of the things that happens is that we need to learn to embrace what are called interruptive questions. And see, I'll just be honest with you. This morning, just because I was bored yesterday, I went to the Harley dealership. I thought, well, I wonder what they've got on sale. I wonder what great bikes they've got on sale. And I go on there and I look and it's like, ooh, that's a nice bike. I took some pictures of it yesterday. It's only $65,000. It's just like, because I've got an extra $65,000 laying around, right? Right. Now, I know that I don't have to, what's the wise thing to do? The wise thing to do is look at the pictures and not buy the bike. Right? That's the wise thing to do. But sometimes we get hung up on stuff and it's like, this is the thing I want to do. And you'll find this to be true, that everyone who makes a bad decision, one of the first things they say when the repercussions come back from the bad decision, they'll say, I wish I'd asked better questions. I just really wish I'd asked better questions. And if we're honest, because most of us don't make big decisions in a vacuum, there were people along the way who asked you what are called interruptive questions. They interrupted your thought process. They interrupted the great, fun, fancy conclusion that you had come to. And we don't like interruptive questions. We don't like them, right? And what happens is we people who ask those questions in the moment, they become like our enemy. You're the person raining on my parade. You're the person stealing my great joy. You're the person who's killing this great idea that's going to change the world, right? You're the person who's doing all that. And we resist and we get defensive, and our ability to hear, to learn, and to see drops, and the likelihood of making a poor choice increases. We need well-placed, appropriately timed, thought-provoking questions because they set us up for better decisions and fewer regrets. This is like 100 years ago, and I'm just kind of getting into doing weddings for people, and I was on staff at Colwood, and there's this lady in the church who wants her son and his girlfriend to get married because they're having, I think, their second or third kid together, and so I'm meeting with them to do some premarital counseling. But I've been married for like 3 years, so I'm an expert at premarital counseling. And we're talking, and even in my inexperience and my general incompetence in the area, I just kind of happened to land on something. And so the question was like, so what are the current challenges in your relationship? And he says, she says, well, we've had some financial challenges. I said, oh, okay, well, what's going on? Well, our car was just repossessed. And he comes back and goes, yeah, that's all over. He said, I paid what was back and I've got the car back now. And I said, oh, okay, you got the car back. That's great. So is there anything else? And he says, well, it'd be really nice to have dinner on the table when I got home from work at 5 o'clock. And the room gets really quiet. And she turns to him and says, you, blank, starts with a B, wait till we get home, because I'm not going to argue with you in the pastor's office. So it's kind of like, okay, then, what would you like to do in your ceremony? Because this is clearly a mess that I have no idea how to fix. So I give it a couple of days and I call her up and say, yeah, hey, about that, our time together the other night. I said, are you sure you want to go through with this? I've had two of his kids. I'm pregnant with the third. I'm absolutely going through with this. It's like, you know that the things really, you're really not set up for success here, right? I don't care. I've had two of his kids. I'm expecting his third. We're going through with it. Well, sure enough, we do the wedding. 6 months later, they're separated on their way to divorce court, right? Interrupted questions rained on her parade, and she couldn't see. She wasn't objective enough to see what was going on. So I know some of you are wondering, is he ever going to talk about the Bible this morning? So fear not. Here we are. This is all a setup for this moment. There's a proverb. Proverbs are a wonderful source of wisdom for us. Proverbs are a wonderful source of wisdom for us. Proverbs 27, verse 12. The prudent see danger and take refuge. The prudent see danger and take refuge. Prudent is kind of a funny word. Like, I know that we're kind of, you know, the pendulum is swinging back and we're naming kids like old names, like Eleanor and, you know, just Timothy. And Timothy, I think, is a great name, but, you know, right? But prudent is an old word. It's not a word that we you know, drop in everyday language. You know, the prudent, the crafty, the shrewd. Or the sensible. If you needed a better word, you could say the sensible see danger and take refuge. I mean, Solomon had some things figured out, and as he gave thought to it, this is pure gold for us. The prudent see danger and take refuge. The prudent see that today's decision affect, pay attention, tomorrow's opportunities and options. If I just look at what's in front of me and make a bad decision, I might be blowing up options 3 or 4 years down the road for me that I didn't know I had, or killing opportunities that could possibly come if I just made a better decision. The prudent see danger and take refuge. The prudent, the sensible, understand that today's decisions show up in tomorrow's relationships. The prudent see danger and take refuge. But the simple keep going and pay the penalty. King James says, pay the price. The simple, the gullible, the naive, the people who fail to ask good questions. The people who fail to ask good questions pay the penalty. And the penalty, the suffering, can affect us and our family for generations. When you see the sign that says bridge out, you should stop. When you see the sign that says danger, you should pay attention. When you see the sign that says caution, you should exercise it. Now, we're not just talking here, I hope you understand this, about physical signs. But when you see things ahead of you, when you know the outcome of decisions that you're about to make because you've made them over and over and over and over again, and they always turn out the same way, don't make that decision again. Don't make that decision again. Make a better decision. Somebody said, right, the definition of insanity is making the same decision over and over again, hoping that we're going to get a better result. Make good decisions, better decisions, fewer regrets. Here's our hope for City Light. Here's our prayer for the people called City Light, is that we as a people would, as we prepare to make a pastoral decision, we would make an amazing pastoral decision that would be a blessing to City Light for generations, right? We're also saying this in this series, hey, City Light, we want you to be making good decisions so that you live with fewer regrets, so that your life is fully blessed. Pray with me. Father, thank you for being with us today. A lot of stories, a lot of talking, but we hear your Spirit speaking to us clearly and loudly this morning in this moment. And so, God, we humble ourselves and we bring our decisions to you. Father, where we have allowed our regret, maybe our shame of previous decisions, our grieving over bad decisions, to get in the way of the incredible, incredible life you have planned for us. Where we have thought that our bad decisions, our poor decisions, have disqualified us from a flourishing future with you, we ask, God, that you would help us just to re-embrace your goodness, to re-embrace your purposes, to re-embrace your plan for our lives that is full of good things. God, set us free from our shame, set us free from our guilt, set us free from our regret. Help us to learn from those things, but help us to live, to move forward. For those of us who are trapped because of decisions that we make or decisions that we've made, we feel like we're trapped. Lord, today we speak freedom and liberty over your people. And in this moment, we declare that for you, it's a new day. For you, it's a new day. You don't have to live with the past. You can own it and you can learn from it, but you don't have to live there anymore. God, set before us a new day, a new slate that allows us to make good choices, even starting right now, to make good choices that fashions a better and brighter and more blessed future for our lives, for those we care about, for those who depend on us, and for the generations who will follow us. We ask it in the mighty and powerful name of Jesus. And everybody said, amen. Amen.